Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. More books, more reviews, more friends. It's the best books ever. Here on the Let's Get Busy podcast. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast. Julie Carter, we're here for a super special Let's Get Busy podcast, and you're my super special friend.
Yay!
You totally are. Carter, you laugh.
Right, yeah.
And yet you know it. Julie is just owning it. Julie knows that she's super
special. I'm super special. Carter is too. She should know it. Yeah.
So I've brought you here today. My goal, I was saying to you before the podcast, but just so the listening audience knows, Carter and Kelly Light and I recorded we had a conversation we recorded a couple months back where we just sat and talked about our favorite books of what had come out so far, and that was really the intention of pulling you both in today, because we talk so much on Twitter about our favorite books, and we're excited about our friends getting published and stuff coming out, but I don't think we often get a chance to record that for posterity's sake, for sharing it with friends, and also so the creators of this great work get to hear it too. I think it's important that this gets back to them. So I'm excited today for us to talk about some of our favorites from 2015 so far, and I'll let the audience know that I actually kind of have no idea where we're going to go in the conversation. Julie and Carter and I were talking about books as we do leading up to this, but we don't really have a script, so we're going to you're going to hear us just nerding out over books as well. So why don't we get started? Julie, if you don't mind just introducing yourself, and then we'll go to Carter.
Okay. My name is Julie Filatko. I'm a picture book author. My first picture book comes out in about a year. It comes out early 2016. It's called Snapsy the Alligator Did Not Ask to Be in This Book. It's coming out from Viking Children's, and it's illustrated by Tim Miller. I'm very excited about it. And then I have another book coming out about a year after that, which is right now called Bunny's New Friends. That title is probably going to change. And then one coming out a year after that called Help Wanted, One Rooster. And all of those are coming from Viking Children's.
Congratulations, too, for having so many book deals. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I picture you in a Viking hat when you said all that.
I have a Viking hat. Molly Idol sent me a Viking hat after I got the book deal.
Of course she did.
Yeah. I love that.
I know. And then my kid was a Viking for Halloween because he's like, all right, well, I've got this hat. So
yeah, we're going to do this.
I'm all set. Yeah.
Commit to it. Sweet. And you also review occasionally on Katie Davis's
Burn
Rate podcast, right? Do you still do that?
I do. That's – yes, I do. That's I've recorded my last crop of reviews for her, actually, which is it's a big crop. So she's got enough reviews to go for several more months. but turns out when you're writing a bunch of books and trying to do all that, it's hard to also do like a committed review time for me, I think.
No doubt. All right, well, Carter, why don't you introduce yourselves again? This is the second time back for you.
It is, yeah. I'm old news. Yeah. So I
not as old as me, buddy.
Oh, please. What am I? I'm a lot of things. I'm a librarian at a school. My school is from grades K to six. So I spend my days talking about books with like real actual readers often, which is really fun. Oh, I said often again. That's funny. Okay, there's some backstory to that.
Is it funny that you're saying often?
Yeah,
often,
because
or that you pronounce the T.
I pronounce it weird, according to Julie, which she said she didn't know until she heard me talk to you last time.
I'll assume you're just going to say often, often, often.
I'm going to work on
so that.
That,
well, no, it's cute. It's adorable. And, you know, I'm sure that you'll afterwards be like, Julie, I didn't know you pronounced whatever wrong. So
you're pronouncing Snapsy all wrong. Snapsy. So that's me. And I write some books too. I have a middle grade coming out in the fall of 2016 called A Rambler Steals Home with Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and a picture book the following year from Chronicle. Which is called Everything You Need for a Treehouse. So I do some writing. I do some librarianing. And it's kind of all books all the time.
That's the way it needs to be all the time. I mean, look how what a great writer you are because of as much as you do read. And, Julie, you're the same. I know you read constantly. And you're up on the current literature. And you also are able to express why it is that the book connects with you. I mean, I feel like that's got to be a quality. That's definitely a reoccurring theme on the podcast that people just talk about how much they read and what they respond to and how you channel your own voice then.
Yeah, and I should also say, so I, while I do have a library degree, but I'm not a librarian right now, except for yes, I always am. I have a little free library in front of my house, but I also have four kids who are this like great age range for reading books with them and also for sort of vetting my own books to give to them, and they'll read them and be like, nah, it's not working, or some of them will like it and some of them won't, because they're 4, 6, 9, and 11, which is this really terrific age range for
that's great.
For all kinds of children's books. So they're sort of my own little library down there.
Sweet. Well, why don't we launch in, Julie, with you with your own little library going on. And why don't you share with us one book from 2015 so far that you've just loved that you can't stop thinking about?
Okay, I got to start with Roller Girl, because this book – so I was getting the pile of books together to for this interview, and I couldn't get this book out of my kids' hands. I had the pile, and one kid would read it. My 9-year-old would read it, and then he put it down, and then my 6-year-old picked it up. And so Roller Girl is a graphic novel. It's by Victoria Jameson. It's very much in the style of Raina Telgemeier's graphic novels and also El Defo, which are books that my kids just adore. And I think that I think we need some better terms in the graphic novel department of libraries and bookstores, because there are some that are, I can't think of one, like Zeta the Space Girl is so graphic, and it's sort of comic booky, and it's got, I don't know, there needs to be a better term for that kind of book to distinguish it from Roller Girl, which is a book that I think if you took the pictures out and put some exposition in there, not much exposition, it would be a novel. You know, it really is a graphic novel. And I don't want to sound like I'm putting down Zeta, because I adore Zeta the Space Girl, but I feel like we need like 7 or 8 different genre tags for what is now just lumped in as graphic novels in the library. But Roller Girl
is the greatest, though, isn't it? I mean, that's why we love picture books as we do too, because you can't break down picture books by word count or by art style or by whatever. That's just the way that that's what makes them all have such a unique voice.
Yeah, that's
true. Have, buddy.
It is. And it's, I mean, there's the real art of discovery then by having them all together. But it's,
Julie, here's my, I don't mean to jump on your words, but here's where I see it going though. Cause I have a significant graphic novel collection in our library here at my elementary school. And what I see happening though is not just that we have such very diverse graphic novels, and this is great, and should we distinguish among them? But I can't wait to grow my graphic novel section to the size of my everybody's section.
Have
it be that. Then it can be like, look what a voice. And I think we're getting there. There's not just a ton of graphic novels being published, but a ton of really good ones.
So I'm going to go back on what I said a minute ago. Everybody just needs to have more graphic novels. It just was the novel aspect of that.
The word
novel really struck me with Roller Girl. And it's about a girl named Astrid who discovers roller derby and really wants to do it. And the thing about this book is, as a mom, I'm always looking for examples to show my kids for here's what happens if you work hard at something that you want to do and that you're bad at. And
really?
And you can like you want to do it and you're not good at it. But look, if you keep working hard at it, you will get better. But of course, I can't stand didactic books that are really messagy. And so my example has always been Linda Urban's Crooked kind of perfect because it can be like, here you go. See how Zoe practices, and she practices and practices and practices. And that's how she gets better, because that's what life is. That's how you have to do it. And Roller Girl has the same thing. I mean, it's got so much in it as far as friendships, as far as what you're supposed to do, doing the right thing, discovering who you are, what kind of person you are, whether maybe there's no label that fits you. But this is, I mean, it's such a good book for me to push to point to be like, remember, Astrid really stunk at roller derby when she started, and you kind of stink at playing this song on your fiddle right now, but both of you can work harder and get better. And then they roll their eyes at me or whatever. But boy, my kids cannot put down this book. Even my littlest, who can't read, just likes looking at the pictures. It's so bright and colorful, and it's got a couple really, really funny, fun moments, but you just can't help but rooting for the main character in this book.
Nice.
And she's got a great name.
Astrid, I know. Astrid. And then it's when she comes up with her roller derby name, it's very, very cool.
Nice. Well, Carter, let's move on to you. What do you have? What do you have to share?
Okay, so the one book, I love how you framed that, that you can't stop thinking about. This book came out really early in the year, and I feel like maybe sometimes those post-holiday, pre-ALA award book releases, like, sometimes, not are forgotten, but, like, there's a big shuffle happening. But this book came out early in January, and I have loved it since I set eyes on it. And it's called Last Stop on Market Street by Matt De La Pena and Christian Robinson. Gosh. Illustrated it. And I think it's one of those books that I knew before I even read it that I would love it, because I love both of those creators in their other previous books. But this book, I think I tweeted about it like the second I read it. There's not a word that is out of place. Every single syllable of this book is total perfection. And Christian's art is like, it's like a hug. Like, you just want to keep looking at it and being in this place with this duo. So it's about this little guy named CJ and his Nana. And the story is told over the course of their bus ride. And it's sort of a mystery as to where they are going. And CJ's a little grumbly about it. And, you know, his buddy Colby gets to like hop in a car and go home after church. But, he has to ride the bus with his Nana, and he's kind of complaining. And there's this whole really great ensemble cast of characters that CJ and his Nana meet throughout the story. And she frames everything they're seeing in such a beautiful way, and kind of slowly is pulling the same observations out of CJ. So, it's a really lovely look at a grandmother and a grandson. And that's kind of a universal thing, right? And then it's also this like really beautiful look at the world. You know, I'm not on that bus with them, but I see things, you know, sort of poorly sometimes. And the whole thing is just beautiful. And then where they go at the end is like, it's just perfection. I don't want to tell you where they're going.
It's a perfect picture book. And I talked to Christian on a podcast, and to know how his story also inspired Last Stop on Market Street for Matt was one of those, like, I have never heard it going backwards that way, that that the illustrator is actually influencing the author. But it's
That's interesting, yeah.
I love that Christian's art, just in the way that he does his approach, is just timeless. Those books will hold up forever, and you just can't put them in, you know, the 2015 or 1970 for some of it. They just hold up.
This book has a really timeless feel to it. It does not, it could have been from 1970, and I mean that in the best possible way. I mean, it's a perfect picture book. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like we throw that term around often. Oh, gosh.
a lot. We throw it around a lot.
We throw it around a lot. But it absolutely is the definition of perfect picture book.
I think, too, though, that, Carter, it's good. I was thinking about that. I have used it, or maybe on this podcast today, we are going to use it a lot.
Yeah.
But it's because if we're all reading, I don't know, 30, 50 picture books a month, because we're reading constantly to our children, and a bunch of those get to be new and whatever, you hit one every once in a while where first read through, you just know, oh my word, there's nothing you can change about this. There's not a word to move anywhere.
Yeah, nowhere. Where you like clutch your heart and it's kind of dramatic, but you can't really help it and you don't really know that you did that. Like that kind of. And the thing is, too, we, all of us, read picture books a ton, all the time. And there are some that, and again, not are forgettable, but like just you read it and you're done. And that's great. And it'll serve its purpose to some reader, but not me as a reader. But, you know, some stay with you.
And that's what's so cool about there being so many picture books. Yeah, exactly. That they're books for everybody.
Right, and that it's perfect for me. It doesn't have to be perfect for the world. It's perfect for me, though. Because we bring something to every story that we read.
Right.
And the book, you know, any story, that's what storytelling is. It completes a part of us. So when you have a story that doesn't leave you wanting for anything more, that you just walk away feeling that satisfied, and that you kind of carry the story with you, that's just how you know that you have something special. My book that I want to share first is one that's had that effect on me, and I saw this book way, way early in the process because of talking to the author illustrator so long ago. But it's Greg Pizzoli's Tricky Vic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I saw such an early draft of this, and it was from way back when I was talking to him for the Watermelon Seed and looking at his just like mini zine that he made for Tricky Vic when he was first thinking of the story. But it's that same quality that Greg, who is so adept at doing these beautiful screen prints and working with textures and blocking colors, tells the true story of the man who sold the Eiffel Tower twice and who even conned Al Capone. and just every design choice that Greg makes in Tricky Vic is intentional and needs to be there, and it's such a readable nonfiction story, and that's something that unfortunately doesn't happen often enough. And how do you entertain a young audience appropriately with the subject matter of con artists?
Yeah.
It's such a smart book, though. I mean, I think I would bet that Greg wasn't thinking, like, how can I do this for kids? And I know he's talked some about the stuff that they let him have sort of keep in there in the book. But
alcohol that he has to keep in because of prohibition.
Right.
But how you balance that? And he does. He does it perfectly.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it works well. This book works well for a lot of ages, but I think especially like that fourth, fifth grade age just goes nuts for this book. I mean, I saw a really early version of this book too as a PDF, and I showed my kids, and they were, you know, my computer's not that fast, and so it was taking a while to like change the pages, but they were so riveted and their jaws were just dropped because this book is mind blowing, and there's not many books. I mean, the books like Battle Bunny, you know, where you read that and you're like, what is this? I've never seen anything like that before. And I felt the same way about Tricky Vic. Like, what is this?
Julie, even down to, and I know I talked about this to Greg when I talked to him, but even down to the choice to use a fingerprint for Vic's face.
I know.
Because here's this guy that nobody quite could pin who he was. Brilliant. I thought, like, that's so simple. And yet that's exactly the
What's
right
that movie where they're stealing the art, the Thomas Crown Affair?
Yeah.
At the end, when all the guys in those derby hats are like racing and that crazy choreography past each other, that's like what that feels like.
Yeah. Oh, and that anyone that's picked up the book, not from the library, but at a bookstore or somewhere that you can just remove the jacket, knows that there's a secret hidden there too.
That's a good one.
Which is just one that you just kind of have to explore. Or even better, Carter, for you and I being in the library, I've had a couple of kids peeking under the flaps already.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they come in from Baker and Taylor or whatever, they might put one or two stamps of glue. But if there's something under there, they figure it out. It was like with Beagle.
But my kids get really mad now because of Beagle.
All the bindings kept breaking for the kids to see the alternate cover.
they get really mad if the case cover is the same as the dust jacket. And I'm like, sorry about that. I kind of wrecked your view on book design forever. But the other thing I love about Tricky Vic is that I don't know that a kid could articulate like, hey, thanks, Greg Pizzoli. You really are looking at me as a smart, you know, human being capable of understanding the story. Like, I don't know that a kid could actually say those things, but that's exactly what Greg is doing and probably why kids respond to it so well. Because it's not that like goo goo gaga kind of here, child, you know, let me read you a story. Like, it's so smart.
I run from Goo Goo Gaga books. Yeah. So, but I, you know, I think the other thing about this book is it's such a departure from Greg's other stuff and in the best possible way. And I don't mean it like, there's a very clear line from, say, The Watermelon Seed and Number One Sam to Tricky Vic. But I really appreciate that Greg wasn't like, hey, I won the guy's law. I'm just going to like do this thing. Let's get, hey, this croc loves whatever, apples. But, you know, I mean, he was like, I'm going to do something totally different. And I really appreciate that. From a writer's point of view, just challenging himself and challenging us. Like, I feel like this book really challenges readers. And there's a lot that you see on the 14th reading that you didn't see the first time.
I agree. It's outstanding. And I think that people will be talking about it when they read it. So I look forward to that. Julie, what's your next book?
Oh, what's my next book? Okay. I need to talk about Smeck for President because by Adam Rex. My kids and my whole family is completely obsessed with the true meaning of Smeck Day. We've read it multiple times. I read it aloud to my kids in one day.
Wow.
Yeah, we started reading it. We were homeschooling at the time, and we started reading it, and then I was like, I'm just going to keep going because it was so good. I couldn't speak at the end. It took like 9 hours. We were all speaking like Boov at the end because it like infiltrated our brains, but we were so into it. And then we've listened to the audiobook. And so Smeck for President is the first book ever that when I saw it was coming out, I pre-ordered it as a print book, an ebook, and an audiobook because I knew that even if it was my kids would still be obsessed with it. But luckily it's not at all. And, I mean, I don't know quite the story on this sequel. I don't know if Adam was asked to write it after he got the movie deal. But it doesn't matter because the thing with this book is that the main characters that he created in The True Meaning of Smeck Day are so amazing. It's a girl named Tip and a Boov, an alien whose name is J-Lo. And, they're such amazing, relatable characters. And so, I mean, it's so ridiculous because it's an alien, but they're so great that he could put them anywhere. He could just put them like in a ball pit at the Tumble Center or whatever. And I'd read it because he's such a great writer. And it's so in this book, they go to the planet where the Boov are living now. Tip sort of runs away for a little bit because she's mad at her mom, which is like, it's a really epic running away to like go to another planet. She's going to come back. She's not running away forever, but it's as good as the first book. And I don't say that lightly.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's got a funny little comic at the end, which my kids talk about like every other day, probably, but they think it's hilarious. Yeah, and boy, I'm glad I got the ebook too because otherwise they would have been fighting over it.
That's awesome that the sequel is every bit as good as the first two.
It is.
Not something we get to say a lot.
No. That's I mean, cool. I was honestly a little bit nervous reading this book, but
I had to. Doesn't do. You said you
no, were, not like, at all. No. No, not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. I've never read anything that everything I've read of his has been just phenomenal. So I should not have been, but you get nervous and I don't know why, but I had to read it very quickly because my kids wanted to talk about it, but they didn't want to spoil it for me because they'd already read it. So they're like, please, can you just go read it so that we can do, what part are you up to now? That kind of thing. I mean, it's that kind of book. That's cool. It's great.
Love it. Carter, what's your next one?
Okay, well, speaking of sequels that are every bit as good as the first one, I love Jess Keating's How to Outswim a Shark Without a Snorkel, which is the follow-up to her first book, How to Outrun a Crocodile When Your Shoes Are Untied. I think I got that right. Shoot. And you don't have to, like, if you just ran across shark, you wouldn't necessarily have had to have read Croc to understand what's happening, but it's the second in her My Life is a Zoo series, and there's a third one coming out in the fall. But Jess, I kind of hate that I'm friends with her because I wish she had existed when I was 12 years old and had written this book for me when I was 12 years old. Her book is so perfect. She captures this like awkward, uncomfortable life of a poor girl who's dealing with like crazy friend stuff. And she's got this crazy family. She literally lives in a zoo with her family. And her grandfather is this man named Shep, who's kind of a crocodile hunter character. And he's got this reality show. And he's just this larger than life kind of dude who is also dating this supermodel named Sugar. So imagine when you're 12 and your grandfather's dating a supermodel and you live in a zoo, like your life is kind of rough. And so it's perfect. It is such a perfect book. It's a fast read. It's easy. It's honestly, I wish I wasn't friends with Jess. I wish she existed much earlier in life. It's so good. Anna. Oh, Anna. I don't know if you know this, but she's named after an anaconda. That is how she got her name, Anna. And yeah, in the second book, there's kind of a follow up to a friend disaster that happened in the first one. So she actually has to work with this girl who has been like her biggest enemy. And it's just perfect. I mean, her voice is sparkling. It is wonderful.
It's such a relatable book. I haven't read the second one yet, but I read the first one, and man, it's so like what I loved about it was because she literally lives in a zoo. But I think a lot of 12-year-olds feel like they live in a zoo, yeah. And you know, maybe not literally, but practically. And I'm sure they're just as embarrassed by their family as Anna is by her family. And the whole thing with the friendships. Oh my gosh, it was painful to read because it was like, oh, I did that, you know. Not literally with the crocodile, but. Metaphorical crocodiles, I'm sure.
Like in the second book, there's a pact. She and her best friend, who lives half the world away, have this pact to kiss a boy before they go to high school and to shave their legs before they go to high school. But but the best friend is going to high school a year earlier than Anna is, and so it like spins Anna into this like disaster. I mean, it's so like your heart just hurts when you're reading it for Anna, but also because like, oh yeah, like I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah, Jess is really, really good at that relatable middle grade voice for sure.
Yeah, Jess is the best.
Yeah.
Nice. I love the comment too that I wish she was writing when I was a kid. Because I've had those experiences I missed the whole migration to chapter books when I was a young reader. That didn't happen for me. So I can only enjoy some of these classic works of children's literature as an adult. And there's a lot of times that I read books and go, man, what would this have been like if I got to read it when I was 8 or 10 or 12?
Yeah. What did you read instead, Matthew?
Nothing.
Oh.
I looked at a lot of Seymour Simon. I talk about Seymour Simon a lot because of my interest in looking at his picture books of the planets of space, these pictures that he got from NASA, the animal books that he did from National Geographic, things like that. I looked at books and I just didn't read. It's one of those weird stories that I get to tell kids that, hey, this is a great time for you. And if reading's not your thing, you can always come back to it. But I wish that I would have just been exposed more to other things. My parents just weren't. They just weren't readers. And so I missed, like, man, I read The Giver as an adult and went, if I read this book as a kid, it would have turned my world upside down. I probably would have, that would have been the book to make me be a reader. And I might have actually been the book to cause me to go into teaching and ultimately to be a librarian because of seeing that sophistication being shown to children. I don't know. It's hard to say, but yeah,
but you did that anyway. I mean, you're certainly making up for a lost time now.
Oh yeah, no doubt. No, I'm glad. I'm glad I'm in it, and I'm glad that my experience in it has allowed me to see other kids that same way too, and go, oh, you're walking my experience. We're gonna be running out of time here, so I'm gonna share my last book kind of in long form, and then I'd love for us to just go around and share quickly some other stuff that we don't want people to miss out on. Yeah. Carter, I heard you. It always goes fast. You know, it always goes fast.
Like a time warp podcast.
And this has been, it's been so hard to figure out what is the other book I'm going to share because there's so many books that I've been talking about a lot. But one that maybe is an obvious choice for me, but it's that good, is Special Delivery by Philip Stead, illustrated by Matt Cordell. And I think it's special to me, maybe also because as a child I collected stamps. My great-grandfather collected stamps and passed his book down onto me, and so I did. But also here's Matt Cordell illustrating this like frantic line to go along with this kind of silly ridiculous story of Sadie, who wants to deliver an elephant to her great aunt Josephine, who lives completely alone and could really use the company, I think is the phrase that's used over and over and over. And it just...
That phrase, and chugga, 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 beans, beans,
chugga,
beans.
Chugga,
beans,
chugga, beans, beans, beans. We had a great moment when I got to share this book. A number of us librarians got to be part of sort of a book launch to celebrate the book and connect with other libraries and say chugga, chugga, chugga and have their response be beans, beans, beans. But I just like it. It feels like a Roald Dahl story to me. If Roald Dahl would have been writing picture books, I think that Matt Cordell is – our modern Quentin Blake. I don't know. There's a lot of great influence that goes into this book, I think, perceived influence. And I love where I see it coming from. And I just think that Philip and Matt are two of our greatest gifts in children's literature right now. And it's because they produce books like this.
This book works on so many different levels. Like, it's such a good story, but then there's so many little bits. Like, I almost picture it, like, with, like, these lines going outwards from it, because there's so – you could just pick, like, just the monkeys or just the – I can't remember if it's an alligator or a crocodile. You know, just the ant at the end. Yeah. And just think about, like, the elephant on the plane. Just think about, like, this one bit of it and sort of explode outwards. I mean, I think – I want to write a separate thing about each of those characters. I mean, I won't because they're not mine, but I mean, I want to think of a different story of each of them, I guess. This works as a picture book because there's so much that's not said.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's just another one of those examples where it's so important as an author to edit down your writing so that there's room for the illustrator for the illustrations to carry some of the work. And I think that's when picture books are at their best, when you can see that this book just wouldn't have been the same. Well, now in this case, it's different too, because Philip does illustrate. But in those cases where you know that the book just wouldn't be the same if you wrote too much and the illustrations weren't able to do some of that heavy lifting, I'm glad to see that here's a picture book that from a known and respected illustrator had someone else illustrate for him, because I think that Matt's art is ideal for this. And I love the idea. I loved learning that Philip also collects stamps and that then Matt created some of this work based on some of Philip's favorite stamps. Matt kind of adjusted the stamps and made them into new art that, you know, fits along in the world that they created for special delivery. There's just a lot of things here that are jumping off points that you can go in 100 different directions in source material that talking about collecting stamps is not something I've ever heard any of my students ever talk about.
Yeah.
But has such deep roots in our ancestry, I guess, in past generations, that it's just, I don't know, it's something that it makes me think a lot, and I like that.
My six-year-old is reading that A to Z Mysteries, that old, like, Ron Roy series, and there's one of those called The Empty Envelope, which is about, I don't know if it's about stamp collecting, but it's a whole thing with the inverted Jenny. And so she was reading that, and then we got special delivery, and she was like, I know what this is! She was so excited.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because our kids are all into, like, emails. Like, are they going to know what stamps are in 10 years?
Well, are they going to know what newspapers are? Are they going to know what this is and what that is? And you're absolutely right, but yet...
I mean, of course they will, but
stamps have remained because people collect them. You don't... There's an art to them. You don't collect some of these other things that, you know, have been replaced. You don't collect newspapers. You don't collect whatever. But
You can't collect email. And kids are natural collectors of things.
It's just a cool thing. And there's such great archives out there, available online and in museums, for them to see these old stamps. And I just think, like, man, imagine when they make that connection that this is from a real stamp, or when they look at other art and think of story ideas based on this old art. I love that. I love it. All right. Well, we're at the end of our chat. So why don't we
Can I do like a quick, like, I have a pile of books next to me. I won't even say much about them. Okay.
Let's just go through our pile, whatever handful of remaining ones that we want to make sure other people are aware of.
Okay. In Mary's Garden by Tina and Carson Kugler. You all have to get that book. It's amazing. Marilyn's Monster by Michelle Knudsen, which is illustrated by Matt Phelan.
Phelan.
That book is so sweet and so great. I love it. I Don't Want to Be a Frog by Dev Petty, illustrated by Mike Ball. Boy, oh boy, I adore this book so much. Yeah. Amazing. And then the last thing that I have is it's a series of comic books. There's four comic books that come from Kaboom. It's called Abigail and the Snowman. It's a story about a girl who meets a Yeti. He's hiding from the government. He's invisible to adults, but not to kids. Yeah. And so she can see him, but the adults can't. And it's only four of them. It's a full story arc. And I don't know quite how it works, but I want everybody to go to their local comic book store and buy all four Abigail's and the Snowman. It's by Roger Langridge. And then maybe they'll make it into a book that'll be easier to put on our shelf because it's so great. It's
cool.
Awesome. That's my
list. Right, Carter, what's your pile?
Okay. Wait, hold on. I have to say one more thing. I realize that I have books that aren't here, but I have a list of them, which is Gingerbread for Liberty by Mara Rockliff and illustrated by Vincent X. Kirsch. Oh my gosh. The illustrations look like they are made out of gingerbread cookies, kind of. They're cut paper. It's a true story of a German-born man who went to Philadelphia and had a bakery, and he ended up helping George Washington win the Revolutionary War. It's so great. And what else do I have on my list? Home by Carson Ellis. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
That book is beautiful. Incredible. Yeah, that book is beautiful. All right, that's my list.
Nice.
Okay, so I have a small pile of picture books that are all as pretty close to perfect as you're going to get. I love this book by Lauren Child called The New Small Person.
Oh, yeah, that's a great book.
It is so great. And it's about this kid named Elmore, and he's got this, you know, it's a new baby story, but it's kind of a fresh take on it. And her pictures, of course, are always like super lovely and beautiful. But her language also, like the words of this story, apart from her killer art, is perfection. Oh, I play that a lot. Okay, perfection. I also love this book called Hoot Owl, Master of Disguise by Sean Taylor and illustrated by Jean Julien, I think. It's hilarious. It's got a great refrain, would be a great read aloud. Very cool art. Super, super book. Another book I'm loving is called Red by Jan de Kinder, I think. This is by Erdmans. Is that how you say that, publisher?
Yeah, Erdmans. Yeah.
This is kind of a bullying story, but from the POV of a bystander and the struggle of, do I say something when my friend is getting picked on? And I think it touches this beautiful space between being a really lovely book, but also a really great story. So I'm into that. And I love The Bear Ate Your Sandwich by Julia Sarcone Roach, which is kind of a perfect second person, mysterious, great ending, awesome book.
Well done. I've been crossing some off my list as you name them, which is great. No, that's good. I've got three. Her Idea by Rilla Alexander is republished by Flying Eye. And this is Rilla's story of a girl who is first swamped with ideas and then stuck for ideas and wants to write a story. And so it's just kind of a meta story about the process of capturing an idea and writing it down and the frustration you can go through. And the illustrations are beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I love it. And so it makes me want to rip out the pages and frame them. And whenever that happens, I get excited. Super. Yeah. I loved Were Bear by Sylvie Henn.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah.
Were Bear. I've been, there's mine, Carter, my perfect picture book. There's not a word I would replace, a picture I would replace in that book. Just a boy who has a bear and they're a bear that's not quite content. And so he's trying to find a place for the bear. And what if we take you to the zoo? And what if we take you to the jungle? Where can be your home? Where, bear, is the refrain over and over. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. And it's one that I think should be the standard for when we're writing picture books. That's one that we should be looking to. Sylvie Henn, nice job on that. And the final one I am going to pull out of the hat because it is out. It is on the shelves. It's not supposed to be out until Tuesday, but it totally is. The shipment came early, and that is Have You Seen My Monster by Steve Light.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The follow-up to Have You Seen My Dragon, in which Steve takes his black and white line art and highlights with with a different color on each page with different watercolor. A dragon goes missing in the first book, and as you're looking for this dragon, as a little boy is looking for the dragon, we go through all of New York City and count different things along the way up to 20. And in this book, a monster goes missing at a country fair, and as the girl is looking for her monster, looking all over the fair at the roller coaster and the animals and wherever else, it's different shapes. And there are 20 different shapes. They are the 20 Montessori shapes. Oh. So there are like circulinear triangle. There are shapes
that
adults are going to be like, what is that? So Julie, a circulinear triangle looks like a guitar pick. It's equal sides, but the sides are, what do you call it, convex.
Yeah, that's a great description.
Beautiful, wonderful. Different ones like that I can't even remember because they're not words that I use all the time. But these are great shapes, and it plays so much more with scale in this book, and so it's so nice to look at. Have you seen My Dragon, and how well those colors pop in his super detailed fountain pen art. This is, you're gonna adore this. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
I should say to the listening audience that all of these books, I'll put them all in the show notes so that you can find them easily. I'll put the covers there too so you can get a glimpse of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I want to find them. You guys gave me – there are a lot of books that we talked about that I haven't read.
Isn't it cool that we're only in the first, quarter of the year?
It's the first quarter. Right?
That's a ton of awesome books.
And I forgot to talk about Terrible 2. That was something else I wanted to talk about. That was the one I couldn't find because my kids
keep
reading it.
You pranked us with that one.
Last word.
But yeah, that's by George Ana McBarnett. You got to get that too. That's book, I can't find it right now because my kids read it once and now they read it again and again and again. That book is written in kid language like chapter books often are not. But it was a terribly said sentence. I think my coffee's wearing out, you guys.
Good thing you didn't say the sentence often.
Yes.
JK. Okay. Julie Carter, this was awesome to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on to talk about your favorite books and for just kind of nerding out with me. I like that.
I'm happy to nerd out anytime.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Well, the door's open. We'll try to do this every quarter.
All right.
Back. Yeah, let's do it.
Never miss another episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, follow the blog, or like The Busy Librarian on Facebook. And in the meantime, happy reading. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.